Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the August 10 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the United States Department of Agriculture Friday morning released the crop production and WASDE numbers. This time around, it was an objective report with actual yield data incorporated. USDA says ending stocks for corn and soybeans will both be substantially lower. We'll try to find out what that means for the marketplace over the coming months as we head into harvest in today's edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. He's from Normal, Illinois. Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. And Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. One note for your calendars. Next Thursday, Agronomy Day here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois on the South Farms. That's on St. Mary's Road, just to the south and the east of the Assembly Hall. Starts at 7 a.m. We'll be running rack wagons out into the fields where you can talk to the extension specialist and professors about your crop and what kinds of things you'd like to have done and the research they're doing right now for the farmer in the state of Illinois. That's all on Thursday morning of this coming week. Starts at 7 a.m. on the South Farms. That's just to the east and to the south of the Assembly Hall on St. Mary's Road.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Bill Mayer, over the past several weeks, many have suggested farmers protect crop insurance investments by taking a position in the futures market. Did the August USDA reports released Friday morning ease that burden?
No, I'm not sure that it did, Todd. I think that the report basically confirmed what we had already suspected or already knew as far as where the yields were on corn. And I think that that's still a good strategy. I think, a scale-up approach is what we've been trying to do, and I think that makes sense. I don't think you have to come in here and do it all at once. But I think you do have a situation where you're trying to ration the demand, and once the market feels like the demand has been rationed, that the market has the possibility of going lower before October.
Sherman Newland?
I think it did a little bit. I think it kind of put the bottom into the market as far as where we might go as far as downside for right now, because we feel like maybe the crop is still probably going to shrink some more. They did a pretty good job of lowering it, kind of surprisingly, to a certain degree, but they didn't lower the harvested acres as much as I think they're going to have to in the future. I mean, they didn't lower Indiana at all, and they're one of the worst hurt states in the country.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Well, if you look at their cash projections, $8.90 corn, the upper end, and $17, the upper end of the beans, we've got some marching higher to go yet, which would suggest that the market's going to stay firm. But I believe it's still a good strategy. You can lay down 20 cents and lock in $2 or whatever. It's management risk. But I think too much emphasis is being put on this. I think the emphasis is after October into next year. So just don't get wrapped up doing marketing between now and October.
All right. I was going to ask this question, and I'll just follow up with you very quickly. Is it more likely today that the October corn and soybean futures will be higher on average than what you might have thought prior to the report.
I believe they're probably going to be higher.
Sherman?
Yes, I believe they'll be higher.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the report confirmed a low yield, and I think that probably the fact the USDA came in there and put it in early. But I also just want to say that, you know, everybody's got a different risk. Some people have a risk on the bushels they've already sold they need to protect. Some people have it on the bushels they're going to produce and how to protect those. And then there's this strategy. So, it's a mixed bag, and I don't think that everybody's necessarily in that position either.
Here's the way the numbers in Chicago finished up at the CME Group for the corn for the week. September contract, which is your lead option, the high on the week at $8.43¾, the low at $7.87¾. That's the high and the low for the week, not the day. It settled at $8 even, down 10 cents. December corn at $8.09¼. Was up a penny and three quarters. USDA, of course, is reporting a 2.2 billion bushel cut in the supply of corn. All end users, it seems, will have to slow consumption. Which sectors have already begun to adjust, the exports, the livestock, or the ethanol?
Probably a little bit of all three. I mean, the ethanol plants are slowing down, I think, maybe not necessarily from profitability standpoint, but from the standpoint that they just can't any get hold of the grain right now. So I think it's spread out across all three. Exports have definitely slowed down, but I think the market's trying to do its job.
By the way, if realized, the 10.8 billion bushel corn crop would be the smallest since the harvest of 2006. So let's step back to the current year's balance sheet for just a moment, Kurt. Do you think USDA is correct and that usage has slowed enough in the last 4 weeks to increase the 11-12 corn ending stocks by 118 million bushels? That puts it at 1.021 billion.
Well, I believe so, and I believe they have to do something to help generate some bushels somewhere. You know, the theory was we'd get early harvest and rob new crop for old crop supply, but I think the usage has slowed down dramatically here. When you look at the report, though, on the demand side of the equation, the biggest fear is the livestock sector, the feed use category. Even though it's a small crop here and feed use goes down, we just cannot let that feed use category go down too much because it takes too long to rebuild the livestock herd.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's the category that really the market's focused on, because I'm not sure $4 billion is an awfully low number. That's the lowest feed number that we've had since 1988. The other thing I just wanted to mention, too, I thought on that was mentioned on the acres. I think that's a procedural thing from the USDA standpoint on not reducing those acres. They typically don't reduce them until the crop insurance acres come in and are finalized in October. So I would expect that, you know, that may have an effect on yield, too, as we move forward.
No, wait. So you're looking forward to that October when the FSA numbers generally get completely put into the marketplace of having harvested acres even lower than what USDA projected.
Yes.
on Friday.
Yes, I agree with Sherman that I think the acres need to come down, but I'm not surprised that they didn't lower them in this report. I think that's just typically what they do is lower those acres as they go forward.
Yeah, I think acres are going to come down. I mean, I think what surprised me was they didn't lower them at all in Indiana. I mean, it's right here by Illinois, and it's one of the worst states that's been hit. So, you know, just that naturally, after talking to producers that are out there right now and, you know, starting to tear up crops and, you know, having adjusters come out and show zeros as far as their yield is, I think the yield and acres will probably eventually come down some more.
Yeah, ideas are we could go down to the 1988 harvested acre percentage of 15% versus 10%.
Mm-hmm. Which would be about 84 million harvested acres, I believe, somewhere in there.
Okay. So we have a yield this time around at 123.4 bushels to the acre.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, in the case of acres disappearing, low enough, and will that number go up, actually?
I don't know that I'd want to say that. I think that the USDA takes those two and kind of separates that out as far as two separate items. And I guess that's what I was saying before, that I think from a procedural standpoint, they usually wait until they know where those abandoned acres are for sure before they go ahead and lower them. So I don't think you can draw a conclusion on what the yield does based on the acres coming down.
Let's deal with the 12-13 ending stocks figure at just 650 million bushels. By the way, that's down 533 million from last month and the smallest number since 1995. the harvest of 95, that is. The bottom of the bin should certainly be visible by the whole of the nation when we get to the August of 2013. I suppose some might think that would cause a farmer to store corn, but should it? Sherman?
Should a store corn? It depends on your situation and where you're at. I know in our areas they're offering free DP, so a lot of guys probably won't store it on farm anyway. They'll take it straight to the elevator to help with the insurance records. But being able to hang on to the corn in one way or the other, I think is probably a good idea.
If it's good quality, I think the quality is the big concern right there. But I would definitely have some type of downside protection, because as we move along down the road in here, there's a ton of end users, a ton of consumers starting to squeak about high prices in here, and who knows what could happen this winter.
I think it, of course, depends on where we're at the time, but I'd agree with Kurt that the quality is the issue. I think it's pretty hard to put the corn in the bin here this fall in some of these really stressed areas. Basis levels, there's inverses in the market. We have July corn futures at 15 cents lower than December, so using some kind of basis strategy might be a way to provide ownership while not necessarily pricing your corn.
Sherman, do you suppose the increased supply of U.S. wheat, since you're a little further south than the rest of us, might be an offsetting effect? Of course, it only increased 44 million bushels.
Offsetting effect on price or usage? Or I think, you know, the wheat number was not really a big surprise. I mean, we had pretty good yields in southern Illinois and Indiana for the wheat. But I think wheat will eventually have to be used and priced in as a feed ration.
Soy complex now. While beans are an August crop, USDA has concluded July was a very bad month for the legume. It cut total production by 358 million bushels due to lower harvested acres and a lower yield at 36.1 bushels to the acre nationally, down 4.4, I think. The market reacted Friday by pushing the soybean prices higher. We're in August, so does this mean soybeans will drive futures in Chicago at this point?
Well, they're kind of in the driver's seat. They basically sold off a little bit for the report. They weren't as overbought as corn. You got some bullish news in through here, and so you generated some buying to come back in, trying to turn the momentum indicators up. China's been a buyer in here, trying to gather some inventory in here. We've had some rains around the Midwest. What it does to yield, we're yet to find out. But we've got a long ways to go in beans. Like you say, we've got to go through August yet, and we've got to get through a September freeze.
Yes, I mean, I think beans could be the leader here. I mean, China came in, bought another 290,000 metric ton this morning, you know, even with prices where they're at. So they understand that the crop's going to be small. The rains have been falling in certain areas will probably help some, but some of the areas that are really more drought-stricken that have missed the rains, they're not really going to help the yield any. So, we got a job to do with the bean prices and supply, and the only way you can slow that down is to make prices go up.
Do you agree that beans have to drive, and if so, for how long?
Yeah, I think that I'm still open on the beans, I guess. I just, from a client base, and maybe my clients have just been kind of lucky here, but I think most of them are feeling better about their bean crop this week than they were 2 weeks ago. And that's not to say we're going to have any big crop out here, but, you know, I'm not sure how much smaller it can get either. But we are looking at the lowest, if you project out there, the lowest March 1st, 2013 stocks ever. I think it's a record number that the soybean stocks would be. So, yeah, they've got some work to do here from a global standpoint. And we're estimating some big South American numbers in there that haven't even been planted yet, too, in that number. So.
Soybean supplies are projected, by the way, at a 9-year low. That in part because this year's usage has been stronger than USDA expected. Crush and exports are up 25 million bushels combined. Still, the agency reduced next year's export figure by 260 million bushels. Do you think that export number can really drop given the end-of-the-year buying this year?
Well, if the river dries up, we won't be able to get it down there, but that's the function of the markets go higher and is to ration the supply we have left. I don't believe China is going to probably back off the first half of this fall and winter buying until that South American crop comes in line. So I think it's going to be strong at first. If it does slack off, it's going to be next summer.
And your expectations there?
I guess I would. I'm not so sure that China can't back off some at the right price. I don't know if we're there yet on the price, but I think if we get to some levels, we could see the economics in China possibly cause them to back off on some of their expansion in the pork industry.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, I think the price has to do the work, and I don't think we're high enough yet because the yields are just, you know, getting worse and worse. And some guys are starting to bale some beans. I mean, it's worse. It's bad out there, guys.
What's your best set of advice given USDA's report Friday morning?
Well, we talked about this idea on protecting your bushels from the guaranteed bushel standpoint. I think that, again, let me stress, I think that's a scale-up type approach. Everybody's got a different situation, and I think stepping back and letting the market do its thing here for a little bit probably isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree with Bill. I mean, everybody's different. Everybody's in different positions in through here. I think you just got to stay flexible and look for the best opportunity and get on it.
Yes, I agree with all that. I mean, if you got yields, you know, you can take advantage of it, but there's things to be done here.
You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio include Sherman Newland, who you just heard, Kurt Kimmel, and Bill Mayer. In just a couple of minutes, we'll return and talk with Mr. Brugler out in Omaha, Nebraska.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey. This week, the temperatures were 4 degrees above normal. However, cool temperatures had entered into the state by the end of the week. Rainfall was widely scattered across the state with amounts in excess of an inch around Carbondale as well as near St. Louis, near Champaign, near Peoria, and between Interstates 80 and 88. The rest of the state saw less than an inch. Normal rainfall for August is about an inch per week, so those places with more than that held their ground. However, it will take a lot more rain to recharge the soils and get the lakes, streams, and groundwater back into the normal range. The U.S. Drought Monitor extended D3 exceptional drought into more of the northwestern part of the state. As a result, we now have 81% of the state in this stage or worse. The forecast from the National Weather Service shows that the possibility of less than an inch of rain will fall across Illinois over the next 5 days. Temperatures are expected to be 3 to 6 degrees below normal. Then the heat returns with the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast showing Illinois being an increased risk for above normal temperatures. Meanwhile, rainfall is expected to be near normal across Illinois except for the far northeastern part of the state, where they have an increased chance of above-normal rainfall. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the August 10 edition of Commodity Week from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Mayer, Sherman Newland, and Kurt Kimmel. On the phone line in just a moment, we'll talk with Alan Brugler. He's the president of Brugler Marketing and Management, the primary analyst and advisor there. Grew up on a dairy farm in northeast Ohio. He's an Ohio State University grad and has more than 3 decades of commodity experience. Some of the rest of the numbers in Chicago finished up like this. The August beans had a high this week of $17.38.5. They're low at $16.02. The settlement price was up 53¼ at $17.09.5 in the August soybeans. November beans at $16.43¾ on the week finished 15 cents higher. And the July wheat of next year at $9 a penny and a quarter was down 2.5 cents on the week. The live cattle futures finished the August contract at $120.60, up 62½. August feeders at $139.47½ were up 52½. And lean hogs at $91.87½ were up $2.32½. Mr. Brugler, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's take up beef cattle really quickly. If I'm reading USDA's report correctly, and you can correct this, it says U.S. cattle producers produced an increased supply of beef for this year by putting dairy cattle into the marketplace, and they'll increase the number of cattle, if not the total pounds for next year as projected by placements. So if not cattle, then which livestock sector will shrink?
Well, I think you're already seeing that in some of the other USDA numbers. USDA's got the chicken price starting to go down because, actually, we ended up with a few more birds this year than what they were thinking earlier in the year. And then they've got it dropping off in 2013. They're basically seeing that some of the expansion plans are being put on hold. We also had some death loss in the poultry sector down south with these high temperatures this summer. Hog side, we're seeing an increase in sow slaughter, although the actual date is a couple weeks behind, so it's hard to get an exact handle on it. But both the chickens and the hogs are very sensitive to the corn and meal prices. Cattle are also, but of course you've got a little more utilization of DDGs and hay and other feedstuffs. So you're going to see the bulk of the cutback in the hogs and the poultry, which also have a faster recovery time. I think on the beef side, you're still looking at reduced beef supplies for 2012. With the revisions, we're looking at 97.6% of last year's beef production for the year as a whole.
Alan, I'd like to go back to our discussion earlier on China here and just get your opinion. What do you see? I mean, China's a player in the bean export market. What do you see them doing? Are they just coming in buying stuff as fast as they can because they know there's going to be short? Or what kind of price levels do we have to get to slow them down on their purchases?
Well, I think that's a great question. There's a couple angles to it. Number one, I think a lot of this buying this week was because we did have a price break last week. We dropped off of that 1691 area on the no beans and created a buying opportunity. If you look at the weekly sales numbers, they'd been kind of going slow for a couple of weeks here. They need to load the pipeline up a little bit. If you use the USDA numbers, they've got to import more than a million tons a week. In fact, closer to 40 million bushels a week year-round. They are 63%, give or take, a percent of the world export trade in beans. They are the biggest buyer, and I think that's what the market's trying to do here is find out what price they'll pull in their horns. What price will they slow down? We know that the Chinese internal prices are over $20 a bushel, haven't been above 21. You back off freight and tariffs and port basis and everything else, there's somewhere around 18 and a half, we get to be above their prices internally. But I think that is the number one thing that's trying to happen here, is we're trying to find out what their uncle point is. I would point out there's a couple other things going on there. One is that they are, in fact, trying to cut down their hog herd. There's been some communications in the last week or two encouraging their producers to slow down their production because of the high cost of corn. And basically, they've been losing money. They've kind of been trying to suggest to producers if they cut back on hog numbers, then they'll get back to break even and everybody will be better off. They've been trying to buy in a little bit of pork there as well to help support the price, which tells you there really is a problem with prices being on the low side. But the point is, if they get that done, if they get a slowdown in the production, then they probably can slow down the imports on the soybean side. The other thing I'd point out is that they do have a 12.5 million ton crop of their own coming out of the field in October and November. And if they don't like the price structure in the world market, they can front load their own domestic use. They can try and get most of that stuff bought up and used during this fall winter period, and then presumably get cheaper South American supplies going forward after March.
Alan, we've talked some here about the yield in the acres. What do you think we can go down to, or can we go down any more on both?
Well, I agree with the earlier discussion on the percentage harvested. I think that is we're still going to see some more abandonment, which in corn's case is basically harvested for silage instead of grain. The methodology is very clear. They're going to wait for proof that they've actually lost the acreage. I think in this case they went ahead and lowered it 1.5 million today because they know it's coming. They're pretty sure they got at least that much, but FSA is the ultimate number, and that's going to be in October. Yield, you know, you get numbers all over the place. You got anything from 118 in the published numbers, anything from 118 to the mid-130s. We're running our virtual corn tour right now. We've got producers in 18 states that are doing samples in their own fields and sending back their spreadsheets. We've had cases where we've had 22 bushels and 140 bushels in the same producer from fields across the road from each other. So it's really difficult to assess what's out there. It has a lot to do with varieties, where the rains fell, when it was planted. But at the same time, we're getting samples in Minnesota. They're over 220 bushels. The irrigated corn in Nebraska is down from the record, but it's looking pretty good. Dryland corn in Nebraska is zero in many cases. Could the number go lower? Yeah. We have, on the crop conditions, we have what we call the Brugler 500 Index. I ran a regression analysis on that versus final yield. It's still pretty shaky. The R-squared is only a little over 0.5, but right now it's pointing to 124 national average yield. So it's in line with what USDA just rolled out.
Alan, how bullish can you get on corn and beans and even the cattle and hog market?
Okay, well, we can cover a lot of ground there. Let's say, first of all, in the cattle and hogs, I think the question there is how soon the consumer notices that the meat's not coming. They don't care if the producer makes any money, but they tend to care when the meat case is looking a little empty. So at some point, if you do see some liquidation here and the poundage starts to drop, even lighter carcass weights will get that done over time, I think you will see a rally in the cattle and hogs to offer some break-even opportunities. We're seeing that in the cattle crush spreads. The November placements have gotten into plus territory by $10 or $15 a head a couple times in the last 2 weeks. So I'm a little friendly on the cattle. The hogs, it's more of a question of the export market, which hasn't been real great here lately, and the fact that we're still running about 1% to 2% above year-ago on total pork production. Price-wise on the corn and beans, I think that $16.91 on the Nove beans is pretty tough resistance. Weekly chart says you can go $17.77. We've already been there. And as I mentioned earlier, I think that's where you start to run into fundamental issues with what China can afford to pay. Technically, yeah, I've got numbers above 18 that we could go to, just upside counts. Corn, these corn, our price and probability forecasts, the standard deviation above the PPI forecast was 842, which we hit today and then sold off. But a lot of it depends on the pattern. I was looking the other day at December futures highs, just what's the highest price each month and what's the pattern since 1976. We have never since 1976 had a DEECE futures contract high in the month of October. It's always been, in two cases it was later than that, and all the other years it was before that.
Alan, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome.
Alan Brugler is with Brugler Marketing and Management. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska. Now, just a moment or two for our analysts to wrap up with their thoughts for the day. We'll start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I think that you have limited downside risk in the markets as of we speak today, but we have a lot of volatility today. We had a 40-cent range in corn, for example. So if you're not looking at making a move today, then say at what price level am I willing to do something and be prepared to do that whenever it can come, because it can come and go in a hurry.
Sherman Newland?
If you're going to have a crop insurance claim, just be sure you get all your paperwork ready and have it there for your adjuster.
And Kurt Kimmel?
I'd be a buyer of ribeye steaks so I can buy $8 a pound or less. I think you'd be able to sell them a year from now for $16 a pound.
Thank you so much. That wraps up this week's edition for the 10th day of August of Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.